All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. All right, so we're picking up in Merak Hashem. It's been a little while since we've learned together for our tefillah shir. So we're picking up tonight in Merak Hashem with the 14th and 15th brachos of Shmoneh Esrei. Okay, so let's begin. Number one. So first of all, our shir tonight is, our series is dedicated by Richard Simon in memory of his grandmother, Elka Freda Bas Chana Allah Shalom, and we hope that on the merit of our Talmud Torah, her neshama has an aliyah. And I want to take the opportunity to wish Richard a mazel tov and merit Hashem on his wedding this upcoming Sunday, B'Sha'a Tova U'Mitzlachas. To thank the Toso family for sponsoring the series in memory of Karen Toso's father, Elio Gershon ben Faival HaKohen Zichron Lebracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah. And to thank Dr. Esther Hollander and family for sponsoring tonight's shir in commemoration of the Shloshim, which is this evening, ending right now, in memory of the commemoration of the Shloshim of Dr. Hollander's mother, Sara Etta Bas Yaakov Mordechai Zichron Levracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, her neshama will have an aliyah. Okay, so we begin with number one. So we remember we're on the 14th bracha on Shmoneh Esrei. So in the Siddur we read, V'Yerushalayim Irecha Berachamim Toshuv. Your Jerusalem, your city, may you return in compassion, with passion also. V'sishkon v'socha kasher dibarta. May you dwell in it as you promised. Uvnei osa b'karav b'yameinu b'nyan olam. And may you rebuild it rapidly in our days in everlasting structure. V'chisei David meira l'socha tochin. And install within it soon the throne of David. Baruch atah Hashem bonei Yerushalayim. So the theme of this bracha, of course, is pretty straightforward. Restoration of Yerushalayim. The question is, remember, whenever we approach the brachos and Shmoneh Esrei, so there are two parts to every discussion. Part number one is, what is it exactly that we are asking for in the bracha? And part number two, which is really an appendage of part number one, which is, what is the message of the bracha? So take a look at number two. So here you have over here, this is from the Siddur, the commentary on the Siddur from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. And Rabbi Sacks writes the following, rebuilding Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the home of the Jewish soul, a place to which we turn in prayer, and for his restoration, Jews prayed in every generation. The book of Psalms has left us an indelible description of how Jews felt when the city fell to the Babylonians in the 6th century BCE. By the rivers of Babylon, we sat and wept, and we remembered Zion. Anaros Bavel. Actually, interestingly enough, that is the chapter of Psalms that many people don't do it, but just like on Shabbos, there's Shira Matlos before you go out and you bench. So during the weekday, there's also a chapter of Psalms. It was this particular chapter, Al Naros Bavel. And what's amazing is, why is this chapter of Psalms? Again, it's all about, it's actually very moving. It's based on the Medrash, where the Medrash describes, again, the incredible scene of crying of the Jewish people as we're being led out of Eretz Yisrael, on our way to Bavel. So why is this part of the weekday benching? Why does this precede our meal during the week? So the simple answer is because, again, the loss of the Beis HaMikdash is so profound that it impacts everything we do. That even a meal, which should normally be something nice, enjoyable, and celebratory, in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, it's marked. In the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, it's deficient. So he goes on, he says, May my tongue cling to the roof of my mouth if I do not remember you, if I do not consider Jerusalem my highest joy. So again, remember, this is the idea. Ultimately, we know this is a much greater concept in terms of the fact that mourning for the Beis HaMikdash, mourning for Yerushalayim, is something that is built in to everything we do, most notably even our smachot. That even when we go ahead and we celebrate, the mourning for the temple is built in. So far, and again, interestingly enough, the more acute the simcha, the more intense the display of mourning. So for example, the paradigmatic example of this is a wedding, right? It's a wedding that here again, most customs today is that we go and we break the glass at the end of the chuppah. End of the chuppah represents that pinnacle of joy. That's the apex, the zenith of the chassans and kalas, incredible joy. They're now married, the first few moments of married life together. And what do? We break the glass. Although interestingly enough, it's just an aside, the custom of breaking the glass actually precedes the destruction of the temple. Tosos quotes that this practice was already in place before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed for a totally different reason. The Gemara felt that simcha, joy, is an incredibly wonderful, powerful, and cathartic tool, but joy could go a little too far and could turn into frivolity. So the rabbis actually instituted a practice of breaking a glass at a chuppah in order to create a little bit of a tempered joy at a simcha, at a wedding. So once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, that same practice now took on an extra added dimension of symbolism as a display of mourning. That's just an aside. The point that Rabbi Sacks writes is, how can you have a Shemona Esrei without Yerushalayim? Yerushalayim is the be-all, end-all of the Jewish people, and we'll develop that a little bit more. And therefore, according, and he writes over here, he says, Jerusalem is mentioned more than 600 times in the Hebrew Bible. So clearly the fact that Yerushalayim gets such center stage treatment within Nevi'im and Ksuvim indicates that it's part of the lifeblood, the very lifeblood of the Jewish people. And as such as Rabbi Sacks, it was impossible to have a tilt, to have a dialogue with God without Yerushalayim coming up. But let's take this a little bit further. Take a look at number three. There's a pasuk in Tehillim that David HaMelech writes, and remember again, David, we learned this in our Navi Shir, that David was the one who made Yerushalayim the capital city. Remember, under Shaul, under King Saul, the first king of the Jewish people, Yerushalayim was not the capital city of the Jewish people. Who was living in Yerushalayim? The Yebusi, the Jebusites, they were living in Yerushalayim. David, in fact, I think I mentioned this, if you take the city of David tour, the Ir David tour, you can go through the water tunnels. And depending what time of year you go, depends on how high the water level is. But the amazing part is, those are the very tunnels that David HaMelech walked through with his soldiers to breach the city. Because Yerushalayim was an impenetrable city, it was a fortress city. They found a way in literally through the water tunnels. So mamish, the same exact water tunnels that you could walk through today are the exact same water tunnels that David took with his soldiers to get into Yerushalayim. Quite amazing. In any event, David HaMelech writes in number three, in Tehillim, Shalu Shalom Yerushalayim, Yishloyu Ohavayach. Literally translated, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Those who love you will be serene. Okay, so what does this mean? This idea of pray for the peace of Yerushalayim. I mean, why is Yerushalayim any more important? Why does he pray for the peace of Israel? Pray for the peace of the Jewish people. Why does someone else say pray for the peace of Yerushalayim? And what's interesting is the following. Then what's the almost like the quid pro quo? What's the tit for tat? And if you pray for the peace of Yerushalayim, because Yishloyu Ohavayach, those who love you will be serene. So Zohar HaMelech is saying two things. Number one, that you should always be preoccupied with the peace, the state that appears in Yerushalayim. And number two, that somehow connection to Yerushalayim or love for Yerushalayim will endow one with a sense of serenity. So what does this mean? So take a look at number four. The Radak writes something very interesting. He says, Shalu, Omrim b'nei ha-golus, Shalu me'akel yisparach, Shalom Yerushalayim. Ask for God or beseech for God, peace for Jerusalem. Ushlom Yerushalayim hi kibbutz golios. So the Radak says that what does it mean when David HaMelech writes, pray for the peace of Jerusalem? What's the peace of Jerusalem? Shalom comes to Yerushalayim when her children are returned to her. So essentially asking for peace in Yerushalayim is essentially asking for what? For what? For Geula, for redemption. So he goes on, ki ad osa is lo yihye la shalom. Because Yerushalayim, and this is interesting by itself as well, and this is one of the major, this is one of the greatest dynamics of Eretz Yisrael. If you look throughout Tanakh, Eretz Yisrael is always described as a living, breathing, organic entity. The land is alive. The land is alive. That's it. For example, when the Torah speaks about the fact that, about the Torah speaks in Achrimos, about the laws of morality, better stated, the laws of immorality. So what does the Torah say? If we're immoral, what happens? Velo sakihar, the land literally will throw you up. Throw you up. It's almost like lahavdil, if a person eats something that is spoiled, that is rotten, so the body can't tolerate it, so the body has to regurgitate it. So Eretz Yisrael is the same way, that the land is sensitive to the spiritual realities created by the inhabitants. So if the people who live there create unpleasant or toxic realities, the land literally will regurgitate, and the land can't take it. So says the Radak something amazing. Radak says, that's what Malchus is saying. Yerushalayim wants her children there. Yerushalayim wants the Jewish people there. So the only time Yerushalayim is at peace is when? Is when there's redemption for the Jewish people. I'm sorry. Ki ad osa es lo yela shalom. Because until the Jewish people are restored to Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim will not experience peace. Why? Look what the Radak writes. He says, kil nechamim aleha, aleha areilim v'yishma'ilim. You know, the interesting part about Yerushalayim is what? Yerushalayim, hands down, is the city that has had the greatest amount of bloodshed. It is the one city that the three major religions claim as the, or if you think about it historically, right? We had Yerushalayim, and then what happens? After we had Yerushalayim, then again, the Muslims had Yerushalayim. After the Muslims had Yerushalayim again, remember, all of Europe got into total upheaval twice during the First and Second Crusades. For what purpose? Or at least what was the stated purpose? I mean, the real purpose was to pillage and plunder anything and everything around. But at least the stated purpose was Jerusalem, to liberate Yerushalayim. You know, everybody wants to liberate Yerushalayim from the infidels, except us. We make room. It's an amazing thing. Just it's a kiddushin for the Jewish people. We're the only faith that actually, who has ever had a time of Yerushalayim, that has allowed it to be accessible for all other faiths as well. Everyone else, when they had Yerushalayim, would not tolerate anyone else. Their Klal Yisrael does. It's a plug for Klal Yisrael. So the Radak says the following. The Radak says that here, this land is in constant upheaval. Why? Everybody's fighting over it. The Yishma'ilim are the Arabs. Muslims. Arelim literally means the uncircumcised ones, which is a reference to the Christians. Va'omer Achakim. So again, so the Radak says, David HaMelech is saying, Sha'alu Shalom Yerushalayim. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. When does the peace of Jerusalem come? Only when there is Geula. Only ultimately when redemption occurs. The Omer Acher came. Kenege Yerushalayim. Yishloyu Ohavayich. Vehem Yisrael Begalos. Shemis Ablim Archorbana. And interestingly enough, so the Radak understands that there are two pieces over here. Shalu Shalom Yerushalayim. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem, which is another way of saying what? We hope for Geula to come soon, because Yerushalayim will only be B'Shalom if there is Geula. Yishloyu Ohavayich, those who love you will be serene, is a reference to Klal Yisrael in Golos. Klal Yisrael in Golos. That when we are in the diaspora, ultimately, again, we're not serene. When we're in diaspora, we could find no level of quiet in life. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, David HaMelech is saying, so we want Yerushalayim to be at peace, because only when Yerushalayim at peace is what? Is when we'll be at peace. If Yerushalayim is at peace, which means Geula, redemption has occurred, then we, the Jewish people, will be at peace as well, because it means that we have been redeemed. But look at number five. The Malbim has a beautiful insight over here. The Malbim writes, Shalu, Achar Shebeer, Sheyushalayim hi ha-ma'amedas ha-chibor ha-gviya, ha-klalit va-achdusa. So the Malbim says, what David HaMelech is trying to stress is that Yerushalayim is the great, what we call, it's the spiritual glue of the Jewish people. And it's really true. You know, if you think about it, see, Yerushalayim has this ability. There's no city that has been the site of greater bloodshed and greater discord. But for the Jewish people, there is no city that brings us together more than Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is like the glue that binds us together. And just so you should know, if you think about this, sometimes you see this in the most non-shalom ways. So for example, we know that in the last couple of years, some of the greatest religious disputes among the Jewish people have occurred where? Have occurred at the Kotel, right? Have occurred at the last remnant of the Western Wall, right? So we have the women of the wall, the egalitarians. But if you think about it, so leaving aside, sadly we have machlokes. If you think about it, what does everybody want a piece of? Everybody wants a piece of Yerushalayim. So the amazing part is that if you were to go down beneath all of the theological and religious differences, at the end of the day, there is such a strong common denominator, which is, this is my home. This is my place. This is where I want to come to serve my God. So we might not all agree as to how the best way to do that, but it's quite amazing. You know, that wouldn't, you know, nobody fights over Baltimore. You could have it, right? Right. Nobody even fights over Brooklyn, right? Over anything. Meaning, but yet, amazingly enough, the one place we all fight over is not just Eretz Yisrael, but it's much more. It's so acute. So the greatest machlokes in the Kaiser are all in Yerushalayim. Why, says the Malbim? Because the truth is, it's what binds us. It's what brings us together. That togetherness doesn't always manifest itself necessarily in a healthy way, but everybody wants it. Why? Because it's that glue, that it's the body that holds us together. Omer, kimo shim tisham, listen to this. So the Malbim gives an example. Kimo shim tisham l'shlom ha-gavia ha-ishit. If you ask a person, how are you feeling? Right? Physically, how are you feeling? So nashivlo, Shishloma taloi im ha'ivarim ba'akocho shebigvia mikusharim ve'ishlahem shalom yachtov. So in order for a person to be healthy, what has to happen? The various systems in the body must be working nicely together in concert together. Ki ba'eis ya'ase peiru b'nehen az yavo hamodes. Because what happens if one of the systems of the body does not work in concert with the other? God forbid, it could be disastrous results, even death. You know, it's an amazing, we say this every day. This is the whole message of the bracha of Asher Yatzar. What do we say in Asher Yatzar? And it's such a, so simple, but so profound. She'im yipasech echad mehem, o yisasein echad mehem. Right? We have parts of our body that are supposed to be open, parts of our body that are supposed to be closed. If something that is open is closed, or something that is closed is open, it's done. It's done. The person is done. So all of this, if you ask a person, are you feeling okay? The answer to that question depends. Are all of the systems of my body working well in concert together? See, he says, Kim Yishol L'Sham Yerushalayim. So says the Malam, you know what this means? If you ask Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim, tell me, Yerushalayim, how are you doing? Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, how are you feeling? Ne'emar HaTshuva. So you know what the answer is? Sheshloma Taloi im Yishlayu Ohadayich. Yerushalayim says, you want to know how I'm doing? Are those who love me serene? Yerushalayim says, you want to know how I'm doing? Im Ohavei Yerushalayim. Yihye Beinehem Shalva Penimis. Bazet Taloi Shalom Yerushalayim. So the Malam says something so beautiful. Look back up. Just keep your place in number five, or just don't look up in number four, in number three. The way the Malam understands this pasuk is Sha'alu Shalom Yerushalayim. If you want to know how is Yerushalayim faring, how is Yerushalayim doing, Yerushalayim will answer you what? If you want to know how I'm doing, Yishlayu Ohavayich. Why don't you ask those who love me how they're doing? Ask Klal Yisrael how it's doing. See how the Jewish people are doing as individuals and as a nation, and that will tell you how Yerushalayim is doing. If the people are good, if the people are solid, if the people are together, if the people are united, then Yerushalayim is fantastic. If the people are fractured, if the people are apart, if there's incredible machlokis and infighting, Yerushalayim is in a state of disrepair. He goes on, Acher she'ikar in Yerushalayim, ki achdus ha'uma. Since the essence of Yerushalayim is the unity of the people, therefore, if there is machlokes, then there is no unity in Yerushalayim. So the Malbim goes on. So essentially, what comes out according to this Malbim is something so amazing, that Yerushalayim is not just simply a nice place. It's not just simply a holy city. That Yerushalayim is intertwined within the very lifeblood of the Jewish people. That ultimately, again, says, according to the Radak says, you ask Yerushalayim, how are you doing? Shalom, shalom, Yerushalayim. And Yerushalayim will say, I'm only good what? Yishlayu ohavayich. I'm only good if my children are redeemed. If my children are redeemed, then the city says, then ultimately, again, I'm not good. So the Malbim says, and we're going to focus more on the Malbim, that's what? That Yerushalayim says, if you want to know the state of Jerusalem, look at the state of the Jewish people. If you want to know the state of the Jewish people, look at the state of Yerushalayim. There is almost like a symbiotic relationship between us and this holy city. Yerushalayim thrives when we thrive. And we thrive when Yerushalayim thrives. But Yerushalayim only thrives if what? If we thrive, good, you get it, right? It's just a big circle. So what's amazing about this, this is amazing, and I always find this amazing because in general, we normally think of land as inanimate, as inanimate, right? It's not, I mean, leaving aside from a from a scientific perspective. I'm not talking about the fact that the growth and the process and photosynthesis and all those things that occur within the organic world, leaving that aside, but land itself is not something that we assume is living and breathing. And yet here, David HaMelech is saying is it does. It does somehow. The destiny of Klal Yisrael and the city of destiny of Yerushalayim are intertwined. If you want to know how the other is doing, all you need to do is look at one. Whatever's happening with one will tell you exactly what's happening with the other. What's the nature of this bond? Let's take a look at number six. So, you know, what's very interesting to note, Rabbi Sacks writes that Yerushalayim is mentioned 600 times throughout the Bible. Which Rabbi Sack, but to just hone in on that a little bit more. How many times is Yerushalayim mentioned in the Torah? In the Torah? None. Right? Yerushalayim is not mentioned at all in the Torah. 600 times he says in the Bible. What does that mean? In Nevi'im K'suvim. Nevi'im K'suvim, so Yerushalayim is mentioned 600 times. If you look for the word Yerushalayim in the Torah, it is not to be found. We have, however, two references to this place, two references to this city, but using a different name. Take a look at number six, or a partial name, I should say. The first time we find a reference to Yerushalayim is in Bereishis. So the Torah says, "Umalki tzedek melech shalim, hotzi lechem v'yayin v'hu kohen lekel elyon." So remember, this is after the episode of the four kings against the five. Remember, this is not Avraham Avinu's fight. Avraham Avinu gets involved. Why? Because Lot was taken captive. Therefore, Avraham Avinu mobilizes his army, goes to go ahead and fight against the kings, and he's victorious. He rescues Lot as well as the residence and property of Sodom. So the Torah records that as Avraham Avinu is coming back from battle, who goes out to greet him? Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem, comes out, and he brought out wine, and he brought out, excuse me, bread and wine. V'koin lekelayon, and he was a priest to God. He was a servant of Kodesh Baruch Hu. Vayivarcheu, he blessed him. Vayomer Baruch Avram lekelayon kodesh Hashem ba'aretz ubaruch kelayon Hashem again sadecha tzarecha biyadecha vayitim lo ma'aser mikol. Fine. So Malki Tzedek comes out. So nothing really remarkable in the story, except everyone is intrigued by something, which is, where is this place called Shalim? What we never heard of Shalim before. What's Shalim? So the Ibn Ezra writes in number seven, the Shalim Hu Yerushalayim. Writes the Ibn Ezra, oh, I'll tell you what Shalim is. Shalim is the place that will later on become known as Yerushalayim. Okay, take a look at number eight. So why is it why is it called Shalim? So the Ibn Ezra writes, maybe Vayibu Shalim, Yerushalayim, Ulai Nikra Kain Ki Shlima. Kineged Shar HaShamayim. So this is a beautiful thought. The Ibn Ezra says, maybe it's called Shalim. Why? Because it is directly or completely opposite the entranceway to the celestial sphere. You know, we have this concept of Yerushalayim Shalmala, Yerushalayim Shalmata. Earthly Jerusalem, celestial Jerusalem, and they line up against, right opposite each other. Right opposite each other. So Ibn Ezra says, maybe it's called Shalim because literally it's complete and that it's right opposite the celestial opening. Okay. O Shiru, Uya Ligios B'Shalom, O Karua Kinal Derech Tfila, Kedar Shalu Shalom Yushalim. So Ibn Ezra says, or maybe because again, it's a city that should exist in a state of peace or it's an anticipatory prayer. Okay. In any event, it's called Shalim. So Ibn Ezra identifies Shalim as Yushalim. All right. Look at number nine. So this is by the Akedah. By the Akedah. So what happens? Now remember again, God tells Avraham Avinu to go ahead and sacrifice his one and only son. Avraham Avinu doesn't ask any questions. He does it. Right as he's about to go ahead and shech Yitzchak, what happens? Malach calls out, tells him, Avram, al tishlach yadcha al anar. Do not touch the child. Don't do anything. Don't do anything. So if you look at number nine, so the aftermath of that event is Vayisa Avram es Einav. Avram lifted his eyes, Vayar, and he saw Vihine Ayol Achar Ne'echaz Basvach Bekarnav. And what does he see? He sees a ram caught in the thicket, ensnared by its horns. Vayilich Avram, Vayikach es Ha'ayol, Vayaleo Leola Tachas Bino. So what does Avraham Avinu do? He goes ahead, he takes the ram, and he offers it up as an ola, as a burnt offering, instead of his son. Fine. Vayikra Avram Shem HaMakom, Hahu. Avram called the name of this place, Hashem Yireh. Literally, Hashem Yireh, God will see. Asher Ye'amer Hayom, Bahar Hashem Yera'a, as it is stated to this day, on the mountain, either the Lord will see or the Lord will be seen. If you look at Rashi number 10, Hashem Yireh, Pshuto Kitargumo, Hashem Yivchar. So what does it mean? It's a strange name. Hashem Yireh, God will see. God will see what? So Rashi says, Hashem Yivchar, V'yireh lo es hamakom hazeh, lahashros bo shchinaso, ulahakriv kan karbonos. That Avraham Avinu said, Hashem Yireh, God should see, fill in the blanks, parentheses, God should see fit that he should make this place the future home of all divine service. Of all divine service, where does the Akedah take place? On Harabayis. So what would come to be known as the Temple Mount, or in other words, in Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim. So we see again, so we have Malki Tzedek calling this place Shalim. We have Avraham Avinu calling this place Hashem Yireh. God should see fit to rest his presence here. God should see fit to allow his children to offer up karbonos, to offer up offerings here. God should see fit to make this place a center for religious service. Look what the Medrash says in number 11. It's a beautiful Medrash. Avram, kara oso yireh. Avram Avinu calls the place yireh. God should see. Or God should be seen. Shene emar, vayikra Avram she'am akomahu, Hashem yireh. Fine. So that's one name. Shem kara oso shalem. What did Shem call it? Shem called it shalem. Shene emar, umalki tzedek melech shalem. So now we have two names for this one place. So Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so God says the following. Im kora ani oso yireh, kishem shekara oso Avram, shem adam tzadik misraim. So God says like this, I have a problem. Even God has problems. What's the problem? Right? If I just call it Yireh or Hashem Yireh, so what's going to happen? Shem's going to get braggis. Because Shem is a tzaddik also. And apparently Shem named it Shalim. So if I just use Avram's name and not Shem's name, Shem is going to get upset. Then kore ani oso Shalim. And if I just call it Shalim, then what? Avram tzaddik Misraim. Avram will get braggis because Avram called it Hashem Yireh. So what should I do, says the Ribono Shel Olam? Elo hareini kore oso Yerushalayim. Therefore, I will call it Yerushalayim, a contraction of both names. Kimo shekaru shnehem yira shalem Yerushalayim. So beautifully. First of all, it's etymologically beautiful because, again, it tells us that the origin of the name of this holy city comes from two major events. So again, Avraham Avinu is Hashem Yireh. God should see what I did here. God should see my willingness to sacrifice. God should see my willingness to give everything for me. He should make this a site for the future of the service of the Jewish people. And Shem, Shalim. Shalim, this is a place of completion. This is a place of wholeness. But what's intriguing is that whose name comes first? Avram. Despite the fact that what? That's chronologically, right? Shalim came first. So I think what's interesting about this is the following. Clearly, again, the Ribono Shel Olam could have come up with another name. I mean, Yerushalayim flows nicely, but he could have called it, I don't know how you would reverse it. However you would do it, that's your homework. Hey, but the idea is that clearly, again, the Ribono Shel Olam puts Avraham Avinu's Hashem Yireh first. That's not coincidence, and it's not just because it flows nicer. Perhaps what's happening over here is the Ribono Shel Olam is saying is both things are important. Shalim is important, and Hashem Yireh is important, but Hashem Yireh is more important. There is something about the identity of Yerushalayim that is contained more profoundly in Avraham Avinu's Hashem Yireh than in Malki Tzedek's Shalem. What's the meaning of Hashem of Avraham Avinu's Hashem Yireh? So take a look at number 12. I want to share with you, I think this is such a magnificent piece. This is from the Lublin Rav, Rav Meir Shapira of Lublin. So remember again, Rav Meir Shapira himself, was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Schach, not just Rosh, he was the founder of Yeshiva Schach Mei Lublin. So interestingly enough, Rav Meir Shapira was a Chartkov Chassid. He was a Chassid, the Rebbe of Chartkov. So the reason I'm sharing this with you is because it had a profound influence on Rav Meir Shapira. Rav Meir Shapira is a great Talmud Chacham, but when he started his yeshiva, he didn't just want to start a another yeshiva, he wanted to create a dramatically different yeshiva experience for the Talmidim. So what did he do? He built a beautiful building with beautiful dormitories. He was makbid, he was careful that the yeshiva had good food, thought the yeshiva had to have good food, and he had beautifully manicured gardens so that Talmidim, the students, would have places to walk around, because Rav Meir Shapira understood that if you want people to appreciate Torah, that you have to create an atmosphere, an aesthetically pleasing atmosphere that is conducive to Torah. If you want people to see that Torah is special, then the atmosphere in which Torah is learned has to be special also. Rav Meir Shapira didn't invent this idea. You know, the most dramatic example of this is the Beis HaMikdash, right? If you think about it again, because Baruch wants to build a Beis HaMikdash, so why couldn't you do it in somebody's basement, right? Or why couldn't you just build a little something or get a trailer? Why gold and silver and marble and all this stuff? Because again, people, we're material beings, and as such, we are taken in by aesthetic surroundings. When something looks beautiful, it shows me that it's special. If it looks run down, then it shows me that probably whatever is happening here is not all that important. So Meir Shapira took this model and applied it again to the model of the yeshiva, which was a groundbreaking. They weren't. The Chizkiah Lublin was a one of a kind yeshiva in terms of catering both to the body as well as the soul of the Talmud. So Meir Shapira writes over here an amazing piece. He quotes over the pasuk, "Vayisa Avram esainov, vayar v'hine ayel achar ne'echaz v'svach bekarnov." So remember, this is God tells Avram Avinu, "Don't shecht your son." Avram lifts his eyes, and what does he see? He sees the ram caught in the thicket. Okay. Vayelech Avram vayikach es ha'ayel vayaleo v'yala tachas bo. So what does Avram Avinu do? He goes, he takes the ram, and he offers it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So writes Meir Shapira of Lublin, Vayar v'hine ayel achar ne'echaz b'svach b'karnov. Vayelech Avram vayikach es ha'ayel. Okay, look what he writes. Lefi ha'medrash. So he quotes the medrash who says that asa satan kolinei tachbulos kedei lahafria ula akiv es Avram shelo ya'ase ma'ase ha'akeva. So he quotes the medrash. The medrash discusses that as Avram Avinu was on the way to offer Yitzchak, the satan comes and throws obstacle after obstacle in Avram Avinu's way. Understand, as I always mention, so the Satan is not the little guy with the pitchfork on your shoulder. The Satan represents the inner pushes and pulls that we have. What the Medrash is saying is, as much as Avram Avinu is on his way to go out and do the Akedah, he struggles. He struggles. Who's not going to struggle with the command to slaughter their one and only son they have from their beloved, right, from Sarah Imenu? Avram Avinu struggle after struggle. But no matter what, his inner Satan can't stop him, but doesn't slow him down. Okay. Ukishloho ilu lo komizimosa. Halach v'na'asel efeim kinahar gadol sheyuchal avar. And again, when all was lost, the Medrash writes that the Satan makes himself into a large body of water that was too deep for Avram Avinu to go ahead and traverse. And the Medrash writes that Avram Avinu gets up to his neck in the water and he calls out, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hatzileini ki bo'u mayim ad nafesh. The water is about to overtake me. And at that point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu split the waters. Fine. Madua, so the Lubina Rav is just simply setting the table. Just to understand that on the way to the Akedah, was filled with challenge and was filled with difficulty. Avraham Avinu had to overcome. People often think that as soon as Avraham Avinu decided that he was going to go to do the Akedah, that it was smooth sailing. There was no smooth sailing. Every step of the way was a huge challenge for Avraham Avinu to take. A huge, every step was a huge challenge. So the Lubina Rav says something very interesting. He says, Madua Efo, Lo ala klal al dato shel Avraham, Shema kol inyon ha'ayo, who ma'ase satan, liramoso kedei shelo ya'akov es Yitzchak. So Lubina Rav asks a very interesting question. He says, so let's play this out for just a moment. Avraham Avinu is right about to shecht his son. Voice comes out from heaven and says, Avraham Avinu, don't shecht the kid. Leave him alone. Don't touch him. Don't do anything to him. What happens immediately after that? What just happens to be caught in the thicket over there? A ram. So ask, and what does Avraham Avinu do? Puts down the knife. He's not going to shecht. Gets Yitzchak off the altar. Gets the ram, slaughters the ram. So asks the Lublina Rav, how did Avraham Avinu know that that wasn't another trick of the Satan? Right? After all, again, the Satan was trying to derail this whole process the entire time. Maybe this was another Satan trick up his sleeve that he was going to divert Avram Avinu's attention from shechting his son by putting a ram right there in the thicket, and Avram Avinu would think, okay, I'll discharge my obligation with the ram and forget about Yitzchak. How did Avram Avinu know that it wasn't a trick? And the Lublin Rav says something amazing. He says, Hoda'as ha'azos, hoda'azos minayim. Kinira, last three lines. Shkinira, sha'avram hayobatuach. Avram Avinu was sure that God wanted him to go ahead and offer up that ram instead of his son. Why? Because what was the ram? The ram was caught in the thicket. It was struggling in the thorns. When he saw that there was struggle, when he saw that it was stuck in the thicket, Haven Shazemina Shamayim. He knew that that was from the heavens. Devar mitzvah. Kima says Satan, who chad v'chalak. So Lublinor says something amazing. He says, you know, had the ram run up to Avram Avinu's leg and started, you know, cooing again. I don't know if rams coo, but whatever. You know, rubbing up against his leg and, you know, wagging his tongue and, you know, panting and looking all cute like, you know, like a little ram does. So then says Lublinor Rav, that's Maisa Satan. That when something is so easy, generally, there's something up. He says, Lavinu says something amazing. He says, you know what? We're not convinced Avram Avinu that the ram was supposed to be offered. It was the struggle. When he saw that the ram was caught in the thicket, when he saw that the ram could not get out, and I have to understand something, if the ram was caught in the thicket, then what did Avram Avinu have to do in order to get the ram? He had to enter the thicket, which presumably means what? He got caught. He got scratched. He was bleeding. He has to untangle it. The ram, this. And again, says Lavina Rav, but Avram Avinu saw that there was struggle. Struggle is always the precursor to Kiddusha. Struggle is always the precursor to holiness. There is no holiness without struggle. If something just occurs very easily, if something occurs with no struggle, with no turbulence, as Lublin Rav, that very well might be Maisa Satan. That very well might be the workings of the Satan. Because holiness is always preceded by turbulence. Holiness is always preceded by struggle. Again, so if the ram would have run up, Avram Avinu wouldn't have touched it. But now that he sees I'm going to have to get in there, I'm going to have to get myself dirty, I'm going to have to get scratched, I'm going to have to get bloodied, that's where Kedusha is going to be. It's an incredible yisod in life in general, because the truth is, and it's very countercultural, because we live in a society that abhors struggle. If you're struggling, then it means you're doing something wrong. Then you have to find a better way to do it, because we try to eliminate all and any vestige of struggle. But the truth is, in Judaism, we know struggle is part and parcel of growth. There is no growth without struggle. There is no greatness without struggle. There is no accomplishment without struggle. Again, the truth is, all you need to do, if you ever read biographies of great people, and whether those biographies are biographies in the Torah or contemporary, but if you look at great people, and this is Jewish and non-Jewish, by the way, great people always have one major common denominator, and that is struggle. Great people are always forged in the fires of struggle and adversity. People who encounter no struggle in life very often don't have the push that they need in order to be able to grow, in order to actualize their innate greatness. So why is this important? Why is this important? Because now Hashem Yir'eh takes on a whole new meaning. So let's bring this all together. So remember, Avram Avinu, the Medrash says, Shem called it Shalim. Avram Avinu called it Hashem Yireh. We drop off the Hashem and we just put in Yireh. So remember again, what is Avraham Avinu says? He names the mountain. He names the place. He names Yerushalayim. This should be the place that God should see. God should see what? What is it that we want God to see? And the answer is, we want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to see our struggles. We want Him to see our adversity. We want Him to see our difficulties. Avraham Avinu says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I know that the struggle I endured in this place is only the first of generations after generations of struggles that will be waged here on this mountain, in this place, in this city. and by Klal Yisrael wherever they may be. That's why the Medrash, that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts Yireh before Shalem. Because if you think about it, what it really is, it's a progression. It's a progression. How do you become Shalem? How do you become complete in life? How do you become a whole person? And the answer is struggle. The answer is you have to be brave enough to wage your battles. We have to be brave enough to embrace your challenges. You have to be brave enough to be able to go through the struggles that life puts before you, and with poise and with dignity and with strength and resolve. And if you're able to go through your struggles, Yireh, that's when you'll come to Shalem. And that's the beautiful identity of Yerushalayim. And that's what it means, just going back for a moment. When the Malbim spoke about this idea, Sha'alu Shalom Yerushalayim. If you want to know how is Yerushalayim doing, so what did the Malbim say? I want to know how Yerushalayim is doing. So how do I know how Yerushalayim is doing? Look at the people. Yishloyu Ohavayich. What's happening with Klal Yisrael? Right? Do you want to know what it is? Yerushalayim and Klal Yisrael are linked at the soul. Because the story of Yerushalayim is the story of the Jewish people. And it's a story of us as a nation and as individuals, if you think about it, by the way. So Malki Tzedek's story, Malki Tzedek named it Shalem. What was when the Torah identifies that Malki Tzedek is the king of Shalem, what was happening in that story? There was war, and what happened? They were successful, right? The story of Malki Tzedek Malach Shalem is a story of success. Is a story of victory. They're eating, they're drinking, they're celebrating everything. So Yerushalayim has these two identities. Hashem Yireh of the struggle and Shalem of the victory. That is the story of the Jewish people. That is a story of us as a people and as individuals in life. In life as a collective, we encounter Hashem Yireh. We all have our struggles. Some of us have big struggles. Some of us have smaller struggles. Some of us feel we can manage our struggles. Some of us feel that our struggles are just way above us. But each of us has a dynamic of our life. That's Hashem Yireh. And what Yerushalayim tells us is the same way. Look at the city of Yerushalayim. Thousands upon thousands of years. Or not upon thousands. Thousands of years of struggle. Thousands of years of war. And yet what? And yet what? It's here. And it's vibrant. It reminds you of something, right? What does it remind you of? It reminds you of Klal Yisrael. Right? Thousands of years of struggle. Hashem Yireh. And yet what? Shalem. You know, sometimes Shalem doesn't mean you're not limping. Shalem doesn't mean you don't have your scars from battle. We all have our limps. We all have our scars. But Shalem means I'm together. I'm whole. And I'm ready to face whatever new challenges life may throw my way. That's what David HaMelech was saying. That's what the Malbim is saying. Sha'alu Shalom Yerushalayim. You want to know how Yerushalayim is doing? Yishloyu Ohavayich. See how Klal Yisrael is doing. If Klal Yisrael is strong, if Klal Yisrael is able to meet its challenges and still remain whole, Yerushalayim will be whole as well. Yerushalayim is almost like the barometer for the national and individual state of affairs of Klal Yisrael. And now we understand why this bracha is so exceptionally important. So remember how we opened up in number one. What did we say? So what is this about? Yes, so this is about the restoration of Yerushalayim. And remember again, as it's on the Radak, Yerushalayim is only Shalim when according to the Radak, when there's Geula. So on one hand, what we're clearly asking from this absolutely is Geula. We're asking for redemption. But on a personal level, what else are we asking for? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same way that we want you to make Yerushalayim whole. Remember, if I'm asking for Yerushalayim to be made whole, what else am I asking for? I'm asking for myself to be made whole as well. Because each of us is our own Yerushalayim. Each of us is our own Jerusalem. Because each of us has these two parts of our persona, Hashem Yireh, the challenges that we must face and endure day in and day out, and the Shalem, the knowledge that we can meet our challenges, the knowledge that we can overcome our challenges, the knowledge that no matter how difficult it becomes, we embrace the challenge, because I know that my challenges at the end of the day will make me a complete individual, because I know without the challenge, without the ram stuck in the thicket, I will not self-actualize. That's what we're davening for over here. We're davening for the nation, restore Yerushalayim, bring Mashiach, and we're davening for the individual. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the Yerushalayim Ircha, I'm also Yerushalayim, your city. I'm also an individual Yerushalayim. I have my Hashem Yireh, I have my Shalem. Give me the strength to meet my challenges. Give me the strength to be able to meet the adversity that comes my way. Give me the strength to get into the thicket, no matter how bloodied or scratched I may get, in order to untangle the ram of development, of potential, of actualization, of accomplishment. Redeem national Yerushalayim and redeem individual Yerushalayim as well, which now we understand the lead-in. If you take a look at number 13, we're actually going to do two brachos tonight because we're only going to spend a few moments. But the 15th bracha in Shmona Esrei is Es Tzemach David Avdecha Mehira Satzmiach. So what do we say? May the offshoot of your servant David soon flower, and may his pride be raised by your salvation. I'm sorry, V'karot Torim B'shua Secha, may his pride, literally, V'karot Torim B'shua Secha literally means, may his horn be raised through your salvation. But okay, may his pride be raised by your salvation. Why? Because for your salvation, we wait every day. Baruch Ato Hashem. Baruch Ato Hashem. Matzmiach Karen Yeshua. Blessed are you, Lord, who makes the glory of salvation flourish. So what's interesting, obviously, this bracha is a natural lead-in. Because why? Well, actually, before we get to that, take a look at number 14. Rabbi Monk in his Sefer, The World of Prayer, has a beautiful insight. And he writes over here, we're not going to do all of this. He says, Es Tzemach David, there are many widely diverging opinions regarding the date of the composition of this bracha and the reason for its introduction. The Babylonian Talmud holds that it should be a separate bracha, whereas according to the Jerusalem Talmud, it is to be united with the preceding one above, so that the original number of 18 brachos be maintained after the addition of Olam Al Shinim. Now, what's interesting is, if you think about it, this bracha of Es Tzemach David, it's interesting. It could be very easily included with what? With V'Yerushalayim Ircha Barachanim Tashuv. Because when will Yerushalayim be restored? When will Yerushalayim be restored? What did we say? When Mashiach comes. The bracha of Es Tzemach David is a bracha for Mashiach. So it's interesting that according to the Jerusalem Talmud, this bracha, Es Tzemach David, is supposed to be part of V'Yerushalayim Ircha Barachanim Tashuv. It's supposed to be part of the bracha of the restoration of Jerusalem. So why is it separate? Look what he writes. A medrash leads us to conjecture that the motives for the introduction of both Olam HaShinim and Es Tzemach David might have been the same. It is not at all unlikely that the danger to Judaism from the new teachings of the rising wave of Christianity prompted the addition of Es Tzemach David, just as it had caused the introduction of Olam HaShinim. For by teaching the belief that the Messiah and the person of its founder had already arrived, Christianity immediately set itself in direct opposition to a fundamental teaching of Judaism. The entire question of the right of Judaism to exist was dependent upon the recognition of the founder as the Messiah. It was therefore decided to accentuate the petition for the Messiah until then included within V'Yerushalayim, by creating a special bracha for it. The hope of coming of the Mashiach, of the Messiah, should thus be kept awake in the heart of the Jew at all times. So it's such an interesting historical note. So apparently, as much as thematically, this should have been part of V'Yerushalayim Ircha Barachanim Tashuv. It's perfect sense that it goes hand in hand with redemption of Jerusalem. But in order, again, to distance ourselves from Christian theology, which believed that the Messiah had already come in the form of the Son of God, so what do? We go ahead and every single day we say a separate and distinct bracha, bring Mashiach, in parentheses. Why? Because he has not yet come. And that is a concrete statement of Judaic belief that stands in contradistinction to Christian belief. The Mashiach has not yet come. But of course, again, just as a progression, it makes perfect sense, because now what are we saying? What's the nature of this bracha? So after we get finished asking for the restoration of national and personal Jerusalem, What do we say next? When will Shalem, when will everything really be complete? When will we as a nation be complete? When will we as individuals be complete? When? When? Only when Mashiach comes. At the end of the day, that's when completion occurs. But I want to end off with a very important note. You see, the difficulty with that is what? You know, we believe, like the Rambam wrote in one of his Yud Gimel Ikrei Emunah, that we believe that Mashiach will come every single day. And Achakila b'chol yom shev, whenever he comes, I'm going to go out and wait for him. But yet, sometimes it's difficult. Why? Because we've been waiting for him for 2,000 years, and he has not yet come. So there's almost a certain sadness. If you go ahead and you tell me that I am Yerushalayim, when I daven for restoration of Jerusalem, davening for, again, national Jerusalem and personal Jerusalem, I have Hashem, I have my struggles, and I want to be shalom, I want to be complete. But then you tell me, as Samach David Abduchom Eras Satzmiach, when will I be complete? When will I be complete? Only Mashiach comes. But you know, again, if history is any given indicator of the future, if he hasn't come for 2,000 years, what's the expectation that he's going to come today? Now, the truth is, we're supposed to believe that he could come every day, that he's going to come every single day. But at the end of the day, it's hard. Again, if we're honest with ourselves, Jews in Auschwitz also thought that Mashiach was going to come. And during the Crusades, they thought that Mashiach was going to come. And every state throughout Jewish history, they thought that Mashiach was going to come. So even the greatest believer at some point in time wonders, okay, when? And especially if you're telling me that my shlemus, my completion, in my full completion, is on hold until Mashiach comes. So what am I supposed to do with that piece of information? So I'll point out something very interesting to you. If you take a look at number 13 again, there's a very interesting word choice here. We say in this bracha, towards the middle of the first line, Ki lishuasra kevinu kol hayom. Now it's interesting, literally translated, because before we wait for your salvation all day. Now the truth is, it should have really, we would have expected it to be written how? Kol yom. Kol yom, every day. Every day. But it's interesting that the Anshei Knesset Sagdola wrote it differently. Not every day. Kol hayom, the entirety of the day. What's the pshat? What were Chazal teaching us? Chazal were teaching us that there's redemption in yearning for redemption. That Shlemos doesn't just come when Mashiach appears. But there's a quasi-Shlemos, there's a quasi-completion that it comes just through what? Just through the eager anticipation of Mashiach. The knowledge that he's going to come when? I don't know. But the knowledge that he can come at any given moment. The knowledge that completion, that shlemus, is always within arm's reach, because that's how we function. We believe. We wake up every single day, and the Jew lives with one simple mindset. Today can be the day. Will it? I have no idea. But all I know is that it can be the day. And if it can be the day, what that does is it puts salvation, which puts Shlemos, within arm's reach. So although Mashiach is not here yet, Kili Shuascha Kivinu Kol Hayom. Every moment that goes by, I know, this could be the moment. This could be the time that it happens, that puts salvation within arm's reach. If you put salvation within arm's reach, it allows that feeling of shlemos, of that feeling of completion, to be a little bit more accessible. So if we put all of this together, what comes out from putting these two brachos together is, on one level, we're asking for the restoration of national Jerusalem. Because ultimately, again, Yerushalayim will only be complete when Geula occurs for the Jewish people. And when will Geula occur for the Jewish people? Es Samach David Abduchom Eras Atzmiach. Only when the Melech HaMashiach comes. But we're also asking Yerushalayim, Ircha Barachalim Tashuv, each of us, remember again that symbiotic relationship between the city of Yerushalayim and every single Jew. Because the state of affairs, or the reality of Yerushalayim, is the reality of us as well. There's Hashem Yireh, there's struggle, but there's Shlemos, there's completion. It's the struggle that paves the way for completion. And it's the ability to face the struggle that ultimately will allow me to see the day when completion will come. When will full completion come for us as individuals? When Mashiach comes. But lest you think that you need to put your sense of Shlemos on hold until Mashiach comes, no. We wait for your salvation, kol hayom. The simple knowledge that Mashiach can come at any moment. The simple knowledge that salvation is within reach any given moment. gives me chizuk. It gives me strength. It gives me hope. It gives me optimism. So that even though Mashiach is not here yet, and even though often I feel life is filled with Hashem Yireh challenges, I have the ability to feel and to create a little sense of shlemus within myself, just with the knowledge that I know it's not going to be too much longer. Salvation will come. Mashiach will give us that shlemus. He'll make us whole. That Hashem Yireh, the trials and tribulations will come to an end. But until that day, I glean my hope, I glean my inspiration, and I glean my optimism from the knowledge that it'll occur very soon. All right, we'll stop over here. We'll pick up Emirat Hashem next week with Brachos 16 and 17.
Yeah, she doesn't put me off. Yeah, she's, you know.